This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of The Productivity Project, Accomplishing More by Managing Your Time, Attention, and Energy, by Chris Bailey, performed by the author. For everyone at camp. Introduction. While some people have normal interests like sports, music, and cooking, as strange as it might sound, I have always been obsessed with becoming as productive as possible. I can't remember when I was first bit by the productivity bug. It could have been when I picked up David Allen's canonical Getting Things Done book in high school, when I started diving deep into productivity blogs as a young teenager, or when I began exploring my parents' collection of psychology books around the same time, but I've been obsessed with productivity for the better part of a decade. And over that time, I've brought that obsession to virtually every facet of my life. In high school, I began to experiment with as many productivity techniques as I could find, which let me graduate with a 95% average while carving out huge swaths of time for myself. At Carleton University in Ottawa, I studied business where I did much the same thing, deploying my favorite productivity tactics to keep an A average while doing as little work as I possibly could. While in school, I had the chance to experiment with productivity techniques at several real-world full-time co-op internships, including one year-long job where I autonomously hired about 200 students for a global telecommunications company, and another where I worked from home for a global marketing team, helping the team create marketing materials and coordinate video shoots around the world. Because of my hard work and productivity, my school awarded me their Co-op Student of the Year award, and I graduated from the university with 2 full-time job offers. The point of productivity. I don't mention what I've accomplished to try to impress you, but rather to impress upon you how powerful of an idea productivity can be. As much as I'd sometimes like to think so, I wasn't offered 2 full-time jobs out of college because I'm particularly smart or gifted. I simply think I have a very firm grasp of what it takes to become more productive and get more done on a daily basis. Although the jobs in school were fun, at the end of the day, I was truthfully more excited that I had the chance to use both contexts as sandboxes to filter out the productivity tactics that work from the ones that didn't. To see the profound effects that investing in your productivity can have, look no further than to how the average American spends his or her day. According to the most recent American Time Use Survey, the average employed person, aged 25 to 54 with kids, spends 8.7 hours a day working, 7.7 hours a day sleeping, 1.1 hours a day on household chores, 1 hour a day eating and drinking, 1.3 hours a day caring for others, 1.7 hours a day on other, and 2.5 hours a day on leisure activities. Every day we get 24 hours to live our lives in a meaningful way. But once you account for all the obligations each of us has, there really isn't that much time left, a paltry 2.5 hours for most of us, to be exact. This is where productivity can come to the rescue. I think productivity tactics, like the ones that I discuss in this audiobook, exist to help you accomplish everything you have to do in less time, so you can carve out more time for what's actually important and meaningful in your life. Productivity is what makes the difference between somebody who runs a company and the employees who work for her. It is also the difference between having no time or energy left at the end of the day and having a ton of time and energy left to invest however you want. Obviously, you can use the tactics in this book however you want. My approach has always been one of striking a balance between carving out more time and energy for the things that are meaningful to me and accomplishing more. This approach simply fits with the way that I think. I like to accomplish and do cool things, but I also love having the freedom to spend my time as I please. When you take the time to invest in your productivity, you learn to carve more time for what matters to you. At least, that's what I found during my decade of intense experimentation with productivity. A year of productivity. I was caught on the horns of a dilemma. Both job offers I had received had great starting salaries, promises of career advancement, and looked like a lot of fun on the surface. But as I began to think about each of them more deeply, I came to the realization that they weren't really what I wanted to do with my life. Don't get me wrong, I'm not some spoiled dilettante obsessed with spouting 18th century French poetry all day. I just didn't want to throw what limited time I had into a black hole that did nothing more than provide me with a paycheck every second Friday. So I began to consider what other options I had, and suddenly everything fell into place. During the 1960s and 1970s, the University of California at Irvine was one of a group of universities that decided to build their campuses without any paths. I went to school in Canada, but I love this story. Students and faculty simply walked in the grass around the campus buildings as they pleased, without following a walkway that was already paved for them. A year or so later, once the school could see where the grass was worn around the buildings, they paved over those paths instead. The sidewalks at UC Irvine don't simply connect the buildings to one another in a predetermined way. They're mapped to where people naturally want to walk. Landscape architects call these paths desire paths. In a similar fashion, as I began to question the two traditional paths I had before me, I thought about what paths I had already carved out in my life that I actually wanted to continue traveling on. It only took me a few seconds to see that the thing I was most passionate about was productivity. I knew I couldn't explore the topic of productivity forever. When I graduated, I had about $10,000 saved up. Those are Canadian dollars, equal to about $30 US or $1,500 in Monopoly money. After I ran the numbers, I figured it was enough money to continue traveling down my desire path for a year, or in other words, get me through 1 year of exploring the topic of productivity. I also had $19,000 in student loans, so it would be a gamble. I would have to eat a lot of beans and rice, but if there was a time in my life when it made sense to make a big bet on my future, it was then. Sure, the idea of a year-long project was a bit of a cliche, but that was simply a function of how much financial runway I had to explore the topic. Shortly after I graduated, in May of 2013, I officially declined the two full-time job offers to start a project of my own that I named A Year of Productivity, or AYOP. The idea behind the project was simple. For one entire year, I would devour everything I could get my hands on about productivity and write about what I learned on my website, ayearofproductivity.com. For 365 days, I read countless books and academic journal articles on productivity, delving deep into the prevailing research on the topic. I interviewed productivity gurus to see how they live productively every day. And I conducted as many productivity experiments as I could, using myself as a guinea pig to explore what it takes to become as productive as possible. Although much of my time was spent on research and interviews to get to the bottom of what it takes to become more productive, my productivity experiments quickly became the most noteworthy part of my project, in part because I learned so many unique lessons from them, and in part because so many of them were batshit crazy. My productivity experiments included meditating for 35 hours a week, working 90-hour weeks, waking up at 5:30 every morning to see the impact on my productivity, watching 70 hours of TED Talks 1 week, gaining 10 pounds of lean muscle mass, living in total isolation, drinking only water for a month, and many more. AYOP served as the perfect framework to experiment with all the productivity tactics I was curious about, but hadn't had the time to research or experiment with. The purpose of my project was to dive as deeply as possible into productivity for a year, and then share everything I learned with the world. About this book. The Productivity Project is the crescendo for my year of intense research and experimentation. Over the last decade, I've read about, researched, and tested thousands of productivity hacks to filter out the ones that work from the ones that don't. For the Productivity Project, I've selected the 25 tactics that, among the thousands I've encountered, I believe will make the biggest impact on your work on a daily basis. I have personally experimented with and use every tactic in this book regularly, and I'm confident they will help you too. I won't spoil too much of what's to come, but in the chapters ahead, I will reveal my favorite productivity tactics so you can identify the integral tasks in your work on those tasks more efficiently, manage your time like a ninja, quit procrastinating, work smarter, not harder. Develop laser-like focus. Achieve zen-like mental clarity throughout the day. Have more energy than you've ever had before, and much more. If that sounds like a daunting list, don't worry. It'll be a blast, and we'll tackle it all one page at a time. You ready? Let's do this. A new definition of productivity. Never one to back away from a weird experiment, I registered for 4 months' worth of yoga classes about 7 years ago. Yoga classes cost as much as $25 per lesson, so when my university advertised a 4-month, $60 special, I instantly jumped on board. Yoga felt like nothing more than a passing fad to me at that point, but pretty much every cute girl I knew was signing up, so I decided to try it out to, you know, see what the fuss was about. But as the semester marched on, I found myself becoming more and more excited for the Thursday night class, surprisingly, less for the girls and more for the class itself. The class was the antithesis of the busy, hurried life I was accustomed to living, and if anything, it afforded me the ability to slow down and actually appreciate all the accomplishments my productivity had brought about. One of my favorite elements of the class was how it ended. Before France, our instructor, not the country, allowed us to venture back into our busy university world, she ended the class with a simple breathing meditation, where she would guide us through mindfully observing our breath. Those meditation sessions were only 5 minutes long, but I still remember how much they helped me feel calmer, more clear-headed, and more at ease than anything I had done before. A meditation on productivity. As the years passed in college, my fondness for meditation deepened. As I dove deeper and deeper into the ritual, I went from meditating 5 minutes a day to 10 minutes to 15 minutes to 20 minutes and eventually, a few years ago, to 30 minutes every day. That's longer than most people meditate, but I chose to meditate instead of do other more quote-unquote productive things simply because I loved it so much. I think a lot of people make meditation out to be way more complicated than it actually is, but I won't get too technical here about the ritual. I talk about it a bit more later on if you're curious. Basically, I simply sit on a chair or a cushion, usually my work clothes, and observe my breath. I'm not into rituals like chanting or focusing on my third eye, whatever that means. I simply focus on my breath for 30 minutes, and when my mind inevitably wanders away from my breath to focus on something more interesting, I gently bring my attention back to my breath. I continue to observe its natural ebbs and flows until my meditation timer rings after 30 minutes. It's frustrating at times, but over time the ritual grew to easily be the most calming part of my day. Over the last several years, while exploring meditation further, I also delved more deeply into productivity. Whenever I wasn't working as efficiently as possible, I would research books on how to become more productive, catch up on the latest productivity hacks, and keep up with all the productivity blogs and websites I followed. After seeing both interests snowballing in tandem, I made the decision to start a year of productivity. Until that point, I hadn't given much thought as to how meditation and productivity were connected. But after examining how every element of my life either added to or subtracted from my productivity, I reached a devastating conclusion. My meditation ritual and newly launched year-long productivity experiment could not have been more different. The problem wasn't so much with the ritual itself, but rather with my understanding of the mindset behind it. I practiced meditation and mindfulness as a way of doing less at a slower pace, and I saw productivity as a way of doing more faster. After the first few months of my project, I even began to feel guilty about my meditation ritual. After all, shouldn't I be getting real work done during that time instead of sitting in a meditative pose and doing nothing for half an hour? When I had to choose between working for 30 minutes longer and meditating for 30 minutes, I would almost always choose to work longer and get more done and not meditate at all. Eventually, a couple of months into my project, I stopped meditating entirely. Working on autopilot. In the weeks that followed, I began to work completely differently. Instead of taking frequent breaks to step back from my project, I would work straight through my tiredness and fatigue to try to write and experiment as much as possible. As I began to work at a more hurried pace, I felt less calm and focused throughout the day. My head wasn't as clear, and I became less excited by the work I was doing, even though I was exploring my deepest passion. Worst of all, I began to work less deliberately and a lot more often on autopilot. Because of all this, I became much less productive. I'll talk about how I measured my productivity later on in the audiobook. This is, of course, not a book about meditation. I know that not everyone will be attracted by the practice. In fact, my guess is that only a fraction of you will give it a shot. But I think there is something to be said for the mindset behind the practice, because it helps you slow down and work calmly and deliberately throughout the day. Meditation didn't have a profound impact on my productivity because it helped me relax, clear my head, or relieve my stress after a long day, though it certainly did that. Meditation had such a profound effect on my productivity because it allowed me to slow down enough so that I could work deliberately and not on autopilot. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make when they invest effort in improving their productivity is that they continue to work automatically in response to the work that comes their way. But I found that when you work on autopilot, it's virtually impossible to step back from your work to determine what's important, how to think more creatively, how to work smarter instead of just harder, and how to take control over what you're working on instead of working on the tasks that other people throw, or in most cases email, your way. After I stopped meditating every day, I began to work more frantically and less deliberately, which prevented me from working smarter, and that wiped out the productivity gains I had made. The monk and the cocaine-fueled stock trader. Naturally, not everyone approaches his or her work with the same degree of deliberateness. Take, for example, the world's most devout monk, who meditates all day and takes an hour to do anything because he wants to do it slowly and mindfully. The monk does as little as possible, as deliberately as possible, and can do things so purposefully because he moves at a snail's pace. The opposite of the monk is the cocaine-fueled stock trader, who works quickly, automatically, at the most frenzied pace imaginable. Unlike the monk, the stock trader doesn't often step back from what he works on to reflect on its value or meaning. He simply tries to do as much as possible, as quickly as possible. Because he works so fast, he doesn't have any spare time or attention to do things purposefully or with intention. I've experimented with both paces, but never with cocaine, and I found that neither approach is ideal as far as productivity is concerned. Meditating all day may bring you inner peace, and working at a frenzied pace may be incredibly stimulating, but productivity has nothing to do with how much you do, and everything to do with how much you accomplish. As a monk or a cocaine-fueled stock trader, you won't accomplish much. When you work like a monk, you work too slowly to accomplish much of anything. And when you work like a stock trader, you're too hurried to step back from your work to identify what's important so that you can work smarter instead of just harder. The most productive people work at a pace somewhere between the monk and the stock trader, fast enough to get everything done and slowly enough so they can identify what's important and then work deliberately and with intention. The three ingredients of productivity. Although it's impossible to become more productive when you work on autopilot today, this wasn't always the case. 50 years ago, about a third of all U.S. employees worked in factories. In a factory, or in a methodical assembly line kind of job, productivity was simpler. The more widgets you produced in the same amount of time, the more efficient and productive you were. Your work didn't change much, there was very little room to work smarter instead of harder, and you didn't have much of a say over what you worked on or when you worked on it. Many people still work in factories or have factory-type jobs, but if you picked up this book, chances are you don't. Chances are your work involves more intellectual capital than in the past and is intricate and ever-changing. And you have more freedom than ever before to work on what you want when you want. You may not have total control over your work, but you have a lot more control than someone who worked in a factory or on an assembly line half a century ago. In most jobs today, including the ones I've had and in the kinds of jobs every high-performing person I've interviewed for this book has, efficiency is no longer enough. When you have more to do than ever before, less time to do it, and unparalleled freedom and flexibility with how you get it done, productivity is no longer about how efficiently you work. Productivity is about how much you accomplish. That requires you to work smarter instead and manage your time, attention, and energy better than ever before. Somewhere toward the end of my project, I arrived at an epiphany. Every lesson I learned fell into better management of one of three categories: my time, my attention, and my energy. Although many lessons or insights fit into more than one category, there was not a single thing I had explored that didn't have to do with some combination of the three, and I explored some crazy approaches over the course of my project. With factory-type jobs, managing your attention and energy wasn't as important, because simple, repetitive work didn't require a lot of either. Managing your time well was good enough, so if you showed up at 9, did your job well for 8 hours, and you left at 5, you got paid reasonably well and lived a relatively happy life. Today, things couldn't be more different. We have more demands than ever before on our time, an overwhelming number of distractions surrounding us, stress and pressure coming at us from every direction, work that comes home with us, beeps and notifications that follow us around all day and hijack our attention, and less time than ever before to cultivate our energy levels by doing things like exercising, eating well, or getting enough sleep. In this new environment, the most productive people not only manage their time well, they also manage their attention and energy well. Near the end of my project, I couldn't stop marveling at how interconnected and important all three of the ingredients of productivity are. For example, getting enough sleep requires more time, but it boosts your energy and ability to manage your attention. Eliminating noise and distractions also takes time, but helps you manage your attention better because it provides you with more focus and clarity throughout the day. Changing your mindset takes energy and attention, but will let you get more done in less time. All three are vitally important. If you don't spend your time wisely, it doesn't matter how much energy and focus you have, you won't accomplish a lot at the end of the day. If you can't focus or bring a lot of attention to what you're doing, it doesn't matter if you know what your smartest tasks are or have a ton of energy, you won't be able to engage fully with your work and become more productive. And if you can't manage your energy well, it doesn't matter how well you manage your time or attention, you're not going to have enough fuel in the tank to get everything done that you intend to. Perhaps most importantly, if you can't manage all three, time, attention, energy, well, it is next to impossible to work deliberately and with intention throughout the day. When we waste time, we're procrastinating. When we can't manage our attention well, we're distracted. And when we don't cultivate our energy levels, we're tired or burnt out. Interestingly, the construct of burnout is relatively new. It was first identified in the 1970s, somewhere in the middle of our transition from a factory mindset to a productivity mindset in the workplace. In the coming chapters, I'll talk about the most powerful time management techniques I've encountered over my decade of experimenting with productivity, but I'll also spend just as much time on the best ways to manage your attention and energy. Most of us no longer work in factories, and with productivity being less about how much we do and everything to do with how much we accomplish, all three ingredients could not be more important. It is with this new definition and mindset of productivity that the Productivity Project begins. With more control than ever before over what you do, and with more to work on than ever before, the absolute best place to start is determining the right things to become more productive on. Your effort towards taking control of your time, attention, and energy will be fruitless when you don't first take stock of what tasks are the most valuable and meaningful to you. Unfortunately, that's a lesson I had to learn the hard way. Part 1. Laying the Groundwork. Chapter 1. Where to Start. Takeaway. Everyone likes the idea of becoming more productive and making positive changes to his or her life. But in practice, both are tough, and having a deep, meaningful reason for becoming more productive will help you sustain your motivation in the long run. A dream come true. By the way, before each chapter, I've included a takeaway of what you'll get out of it, so you can prime your mind for what's to come. I've been enchanted with the idea of becoming an early riser since I can remember. Before starting my project, I would frequently daydream about waking up just a few minutes before my alarm clock sounded at 5:30, propelling myself out of bed to ritualistically prepare a coffee, catch up on the news that had taken place overnight, meditate, and go for a morning run before the rest of the world even woke up. In my daydream, I also woke up beside Mila Kunis, but that's for another book. Suffice it to say, when I started a year of productivity, I was determined to wake up at 5:30 every morning, even if it took me all year. Before my project, as obsessed as I was with productivity, my nighttime and morning routines couldn't have been less conducive to an early morning routine. After I'd finished working for the day, as efficiently as possible, naturally, I would often lose track of time reading, hanging out with friends, or soaking in online cosmology lectures until I was either out of time or energy for the evening. As much as I was in love with the idea of rising early, becoming an early riser would have meant completely changing my nighttime rituals and morning routines, which felt like more than I could handle. Of all the productivity experiments I conducted during my year of productivity, waking up at 5:30 was easily the most challenging. At first, I found that my 9:30 target bedtime snuck up faster and faster, and that I often had to make the choice. Pack things in earlier in the day when I still had lots to do, or stay up late to get everything done and sleep in later. I sometimes found myself going to bed right when I had the most energy, focus, and creativity. I'm naturally a late night person, so I decided to stay up later. I also wanted to hang out with my friends and my girlfriend when I was finished researching and writing for the day, which would have been impossible if I headed to bed early. After about 6 months of chipping away at countless habits to integrate an early morning routine into my life, I settled into a new wake-up ritual, one where I rewarded myself for waking up early, shut off my devices from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., quit drinking caffeine at noon, and eased into the ritual by gradually moving my bedtime earlier over the course of a couple months. I'll explain these tactics in detail later on, but needless to say, this was one of those experiments where I learned a lot of valuable lessons the hard way. Nonetheless, 6 months in, I had done it. I had woken up at 5:30 every weekday morning for several weeks and settled into a new morning ritual. My morning routine was the stuff I imagine productivity dreams are made of. 5:30 to 6 a.m. Wake up, prepare, and drink a coffee. 6 a.m. to 7:15. Walk to the gym. Plan out my entire day while working out. 7:15 to 8:15. Make a big, healthy breakfast, shower, and meditate. 8:15. Reconnect to the internet after my daily shutoff ritual. 8:15 to 9. Read. And 9 onwards, begin working. I continued to follow the ritual for several months afterwards, religiously powering down my devices every night at 8 p.m., heading to bed at 9:30 and waking up promptly at 5:30, feeling virtuous and pleased with my efforts until, one Monday morning, I realized something that stopped me cold in my tracks. I absolutely hated going to bed and waking up early. After my initial excitement over my new routine wore off, I found myself growing tired of saying no to hanging out with my friends, simply because I had to head to bed early. I couldn't stand quitting work when I was in the zone late at night. Every morning I felt groggy for the first hour or two I was awake, and I discovered I much preferred to meditate, work out, read, and plan out my day later on in the day, when I had more energy and attention to bring to the tasks. Worst of all, the ritual didn't make me more productive. With my new routine, I found I accomplished what I intended to a lot less often, wrote fewer words on average per day, and had less energy and focus throughout the day. And after doing the research, I discovered that there is absolutely no difference in socioeconomic standing between somebody who is an early riser and somebody who is a night owl. We are all wired differently, and one routine is not inherently better than another. It's what you do with your waking hours, I discovered, that makes the difference in how productive you are. As much as I adored the idea of waking up early, in practice, I liked waking up later much more. Productivity with a purpose. I think the same is true of productivity itself. Everyone likes the idea of taking on more and making positive changes to their life. But in practice, becoming more productive is one of the toughest things you can undertake to do. If it were easy, I probably wouldn't have dedicated a year of my life to exploring the topic, and there would be no reason for this book to exist. Though I learned a great many lessons from this year-long experiment, perhaps the biggest lesson I learned was just how important it is to deeply care about why you want to become more productive. If I were listening to this audiobook instead of reading it to you, that last sentence is one I would have glossed over, so I think it's worth repeating. Perhaps the biggest lesson I learned from this experiment was just how important it is to deeply care about your productivity goals, about why you want to become more productive. When I committed to turning my morning and nighttime routines inside out to wake up at 5:30 every morning, I didn't think much about whether I deeply cared about waking up early. I was in love with the sepia-toned fantasy of being the productivity guy who rose while everyone else was still sleeping and got more done than everyone else. I didn't think much about what it would take to make that a reality, or about whether I actually cared about what was involved in making that change on a deeper level. Working deliberately and purposefully throughout the day can make or break how productive you are. But having a purpose is just as important. The intention behind your actions is like the shaft behind an arrowhead. It's pretty difficult to become more productive day in and day out when you don't care about what you want to accomplish on a deeper level. This productivity insight is by far the least sexy tip in this book, but it may be the most important. Investing countless hours becoming more productive, or taking on new habits or routines, is a waste when you don't actually care about the changes you're trying to make, and you won't have the motivation to sustain these changes in the long term. Sexy values. The reason I've continued to research and explore productivity over the last decade is that productivity is connected with so many things I value at a deep level. Efficiency, meaning, control, discipline, growth, freedom, learning, staying organized. These values are what motivate me to spend so much of my leisure time reading and seeking out online science lectures. Waking up at 5:30 every morning? Not so much. A long procession of people before me have written about acting in accordance with your values. And to be honest, whenever I've read about those kinds of statements, I've almost always tuned out or simply read on. Unlike Mila Kunis, values are anything but sexy. But they are most definitely worth thinking about when you're planning on making major changes to your life. If I had taken just a few minutes to think about how waking up early was connected with what I deeply cared about, not at all, I could have saved myself months of willpower and sacrifice and done something much more productive with that time. Questioning why you want to make a change to your life can save you countless hours or even days of time when you discover that you don't really want to make the change in the first place. The practical part. I know right now you're deep in listening mode and aren't eager to stop listening and perform a quick challenge, despite how much more productive doing so will make you. But making the jump between knowing and doing is what productivity is all about. Let's gently transition from listening into doing and try the first productivity challenge of the book. Don't worry, it's a lot easier than you think. Most of the challenges in this book will take you less than 10 minutes, and all you need for most of them is a pen and a sheet or two of paper. There isn't a challenge in every chapter, but I have added them when I think they'll be worth your time. I know your time is the most valuable and limited resource you have, and I promise I won't waste any of it. For every minute you spend on these challenges, I promise you'll make that time back at least 10 times over. Ready to go? Go ahead and grab yourself a pen and paper, and then listen on. The Values Challenge. Time required, 7 minutes. Energy and focus required, 6 out of 10. Value, 8 out of 10. Fun, 3 out of 10. What you'll get out of it? Access to your deeper reasons for becoming more productive. If you're using the tactics in this book to take more on, you could potentially save countless hours by only focusing on the productivity goals you care about. The return on this challenge can be massive. I know that if I simply suggested you make a list of your deepest held values and then create a plan how to act in accordance with them, you'd either put down this audiobook and write a negative review on Amazon, or skip ahead to see what other productivity tips I have up my sleeve. For that reason, I've instead selected a few very simple questions for you to ask yourself that I found helpful when examining new routines and habits. I've personally done every single one of the challenges in this audiobook and can vouch for their efficacy. They work. I'm not just pulling them out of the ether to waste your time. To start with, imagine this. As a result of implementing the tactics in this audiobook, you have 2 more hours of leisure time every day. How will you use that time? What new things will you take on? What will you spend more time on? When you picked up this audiobook, what productivity goals or new habits, routines, or rituals did you have in mind that you wanted to take on? Here are some important questions regarding your values and goals to think about. First, go deep. Ask yourself, what deep-rooted values are associated with your productivity goals? Why do you want to become more productive? If you find yourself coming up with a lot of values you deeply care about, like meaning, community, relationships, freedom, learning, etc., chances are you care about the goal on a deep personal level, and the change you have in mind is probably worth making. If you find yourself blustering your way through this exercise, maybe a particular change or goal isn't in tune with your values and is not really all that important to you. Google list of values for a few great lists to start with. Second, if thinking about your values is too daunting for you, fill in this blank. With each change you want to make, I deeply care about this because blank. Spin off as many reasons as you can to determine whether you care about each change on a deeper level. Another quick shortcut to determine if a change is meaningful to you. Fast forward to when you're on your deathbed. Ask yourself, would I regret doing more or less of this? I believe the point of greater productivity is to carve out more time for the things that are actually meaningful to you. But tasks and commitments aren't valuable only because they are meaningful to you. They can also be valuable because they have a significant impact in your work. Chapter 2. Not all tasks are created equal. Takeaway. Not all tasks are created equal. There are certain tasks in your work that, for every minute you spend on them, let you accomplish more than your other tasks. Taking a step back from your work to identify your highest impact tasks will let you invest your time, attention, and energy in the right things. Meditating for 35 hours. I learned the hard way how important it was to slow down and work more deliberately when I abandoned my meditation practice. So I decided to conduct an experiment to get to the bottom of just how much meditation and slowing down impacted my productivity, and designed an experiment to meditate for 35 hours over 6 days. As a seasoned meditator, I was no stranger to meditating for long stretches of time. Before the experiment, I had meditated for 30 minutes every day for several years, practiced meditation with my Buddhist meditation group every week, and attended an occasional meditation retreat where I lived in total silence for days at a time while meditating with other attendees for 5 or 6 hours every day. 35 hours of meditation in a week would be a lot for even our old friend the seasoned monk who takes an hour to do anything, but I was too curious not to do it. To spice things up, throughout the week, I also performed the same simple chores and tasks I would usually undertake, but in a mindful state. While running the experiment, I tried my best to remain as productive as possible during the time when I wasn't meditating, so I could observe the day-to-day effects of meditation on my energy levels, focus, and productivity. Over 6 days, after live streaming a tally of how long I meditated for each day, I performed 14.3 hours of sitting meditation, 8.5 hours of walking meditation, 6.2 hours of mindfully doing chores, and 6 hours of mindful eating. Measuring productivity. One of the most interesting parts of this project was how circular it was by design. Being productive about studying productivity is, in a way, like writing about writing. But first and foremost, a year of productivity was a research project, and to me, having a productive day meant learning as much as possible and sharing what I learned with readers of my blog to help them become more productive too. When I started a year of productivity, I created a fancy landing page on my website that contained live updating charts of exactly how many words I wrote, pages I read, and hours I worked each day. It's still live at alifeofproductivity.com/statistics. My thought behind the graphs was simple. The more I wrote and read, the more productive I would be. The problem with these metrics, as you might have guessed, is they only tell a part of the story. If I worked all day long and wrote 1,000 words, I would be considered productive under these metrics. But what if I intended to write 2,000 words and only wrote 1,000? What if I couldn't focus all day long and wasted hours watching cooking shows on Netflix? What if I felt totally burnt out at the end of the day? What if those 1,000 words were worthless? The entire Gettysburg Address, after all, was only 272 words. A month or two into my project, I realized my mistake in designing my website's stats page, a mistake I think people make all too often with productivity. I had essentially reverted to a factory mindset and equated productivity with efficiency instead of looking at how much I accomplished. Once I set aside that mindset and instead focused on how much I accomplished, my productivity skyrocketed. I think the best way to measure productivity is to ask yourself a very simple question at the end of every day. Did I get done what I intended to do? When you accomplish what you intend to, and you're realistic and deliberate about the productivity goals you set, in my opinion, you are productive. If at the beginning of the day you intend to write 1,000 great words and you do, you are productive. If you intend to finish a report at work, ace a job interview, and spend quality time with your family, and you do, again, you are perfectly productive. If you intend to relax for the day, and you have the most relaxing day you've had all year, you are perfectly productive. Intention and deliberateness are two sides of the same coin, and I think both are essential if you want to live more productively. Asking myself whether I accomplished what I intended to was the first of two ways I measured how productive I was over the course of my project. The second was observing how each new experiment or productivity technique affected my ability to manage the three ingredients of productivity. Time. I observed how intelligently I used my time, how much I got done throughout the day, how many words and pages I wrote and read, and how often I procrastinated. Attention. I noted what I focused on, how well I focused, and how easily I was distracted. Energy. I scrutinized how much drive, motivation, and overall energy I had, tracking how my energy levels fluctuated over the course of an experiment. Naturally, these variables are much more subjective than whether I accomplished what I intended to accomplish. My productivity experiments triggered me to study the research when I noticed how a topic affected how I spent my time, attention, or energy. I'm skeptical by nature, so I leaned on science as much as possible to explain my results. Plus, the science behind this stuff is fascinating. Working smarter. While my meditation experiment helped me to improve my focus more than anything I had tried up to that point, the experiment had another effect I hadn't anticipated. It let me manage my time better because it made it much easier for me to identify what was important, which let me work smarter instead of just harder. The reason I found it easier to work smarter during this experiment wasn't because of the meditation practice itself. It was simply because I had so little time to get work done that week. During the experiment, I continued to write articles and read as much as possible. But since I had so little time to do it in, I frequently had to step back from my work to reflect on whether the writing I was doing was important and worth doing. With so little time, it was my only option. A similar thing happened during my experiment on 90-hour work weeks. This led me to one of the most obvious in hindsight epiphanies. Not all tasks are created equal. Put another way, there are certain tasks in your work that, minute for minute, lead you to accomplish more. This is true regardless of where you work or what you do. Take, for example, tasks like planning out your week, mentoring new employees, investing in your learning, pushing back on meetings without an agenda, saying no to as much busy work as possible, automating repetitive tasks, and looking at pictures of baby animals. More on cute baby animals later on in the audiobook. Minute for minute, you accomplish more doing these tasks than you do through tasks like attending pointless meetings, keeping up to date with social media, checking your email repeatedly, reading news websites, and participating in idle chit-chat. The more time, energy, and attention you invest in your most significant tasks, the more you accomplish in the same amount of time, and the more productive you become. When meditating for 35 hours a week, I had about 20 hours outside of the experiment to get real work done, which meant that if I didn't determine what my smartest tasks were, I wouldn't have accomplished what I intended to that week. That forced me to step back from my work to carefully plan my week so I could make the most use out of what limited time I had. At some level, everyone knows that not all tasks are equal. Most people can see that they will accomplish more working on doing their taxes for an hour than watching a movie. But as the cliche goes, common sense isn't always common action. Just because you know something to be true doesn't mean you'll act on it. Even though acting on what you know is exactly what you have to do in order to become more productive. Your most important tasks. A task, project, or commitment is important for one of two reasons. Because it's meaningful to you, it's connected with your values, or because it makes a large impact in your work. Activities that are connected with your deepest held values will lead you to be happier and more motivated. And activities that are primary to your work will let you become more productive in the same amount of time. If you're lucky, you'll have tasks in your job that are both meaningful and effective. How close or how far your job is from working in a factory or an assembly line will determine how much control you have over this. Whereas a factory worker has to work on whatever he's assigned, an entrepreneur can work on whatever she wants. As a quick aside, I don't consider either type of task better or worse, since everyone values meaningful work and money differently. As I began to think hard about how I spent my time, I quickly realized how much productivity I was leaving on the table every day. Not because I wasn't working hard, but because I wasn't working hard on the best possible tasks. I wasn't as productive as I could have been because I had never sat down, determined the highest impact tasks in my work, and deliberately worked on those tasks. Instead, I had been spending my time on the items that happened to fall onto my to-do list. I think this realization speaks volumes to how valuable this project became for me and for many of my readers. When we're hunkered down in our work, we often aren't able to step back to observe how smart we're working. Keeping productivity in mind for an entire year led me to many realizations like this one, despite how obvious some of those insights are in hindsight. You may already be familiar with the Pareto principle, often referred to as the 80-20 rule. The rule says that 80% of some result comes from 20% of some cause. For example, 80% of your sales come from 20% of your customers, or 80% of all income is earned by 20% of the people. I think this rule can be applied to productivity as well. A very small number of tasks lead to the majority of what you accomplish. Productivity isn't about doing more things, it's about doing the right things. After my meditation experiment, I took the time to step back from my project, make a list of everything I was responsible for, and pick my most important tasks. That's when I discovered something fascinating. I accomplished the most through just three main tasks. In order, they were 1, writing articles about what I learned during my project, 2, conducting productivity experiments on myself, 3, reading and researching about productivity. Naturally, I had other things I was responsible for as well, like website maintenance, sending email newsletters, interviewing experts, managing my social media accounts, answering email, and coaching people on becoming more productive. But it was through the preceding three activities that I accomplished the most by a long shot. All my other commitments led me to accomplish less in the same amount of time, and most of them could be eliminated or compressed, which I discuss later. The Impact Challenge. Estimated time to do the challenge, 10 minutes. Energy and focus required, 8 out of 10. Value, 10 out of 10. Fun, 8 out of 10. What you'll get out of it. You'll discover the highest impact tasks in your work, which will show you where you should invest the majority of your time, attention, and energy. Before you invest in increasing your productivity, it's crucial you determine which areas you want to become more productive in. This simple activity will help you do that. This challenge also lays the groundwork for the rest of this audiobook. Thankfully, you don't have to meditate for 35 hours in a week to determine your highest impact tasks. I have experimented with innumerable techniques to help me organize and prioritize my tasks, and while some systems worked well, most quickly fell by the wayside. Prioritizing everything you're responsible for might sound like a pain, but people make it out to be much more complicated than it actually is. Out of all the challenges in this audiobook, this one is one of the most important. After all, it's difficult to become more productive when you don't first take stock of what you should actually be more productive on. My absolute favorite technique for prioritizing what's important comes from Brian Tracy, who wrote the book Eat That Frog. Brian, who has a similar view on high-impact tasks, says in his book that, quote, 90% of the value that you contribute to your company is contained in just three tasks. Brian recommends a linear process to identify your highest impact tasks, projects, and commitments. His method is quite simple, and I've modified and expanded on it a bit to make it more helpful. 1. Make a list of everything you're responsible for in your work. This part of the activity takes the longest, but it feels incredible to get everything you're responsible for onto a sheet of paper in front of you, or into whatever your preferred digital equivalent is. There's a good chance you haven't taken a moment to step back and think about everything you're responsible for in your work on a weekly or monthly basis. 2. After you've collected a list of everything you're responsible for, ask yourself, if you could just do one item on that list all day, every day, what item would you do that would allow you to accomplish the most with the same amount of time? Put another way, what item on the list is the most valuable to your boss or yourself, if you're self-employed like I am? 3. Finally, ask yourself, if you could do only two more items on that list all day, what second and third tasks let you accomplish the most in the same amount of time? These three tasks, or four, if you have a fourth that's as important as your top three, are the 20% of your tasks through which you contribute at least 80% of your value. Value is the operative word here. Unlike your most important tasks, your most purposeful tasks may not necessarily contribute a lot of value or meaning to you, but they contribute an incredible amount of value to your productivity. As I began to deliberately and intentionally invest more time, attention, and energy into my highest return tasks, my productivity shot through the roof. Working smarter instead of just harder is impossible without first stepping back from your work, and that's what this section of the book, Laying the Groundwork, is all about. After you've begun to lay the groundwork by determining your smartest tasks to work on, what comes next? Working on them, of course. Chapter 3. Three Daily Tasks. Takeaway. The absolute best technique I've found to work deliberately and with intention every day is the rule of three. The rule is simple. At the beginning of each day, before you start working, decide what three things you want to accomplish by the end of the day. Do the same at the start of every week. The rule of three. Knowing your most valuable tasks is important, but as G.I. Joe would say, knowing is only half the battle. When you sit in front of your computer tomorrow morning and open up your inbox, it is far too easy to forget about what's important to work on when more urgent but less important tasks come your way. So while working deliberately is good in theory, what does it look like in practice? I've experimented with dozens of systems to manage everything on my plate, everything from the GTD, getting things done, system, to Kanban, to keeping sticky notes everywhere, to trying out more productivity apps than I can count. Most of them worked well for capturing and organizing everything I had to get done, and I'll talk about the ones that will help you the most later on. But every one of them also had a rather large downside. They didn't help me slow down and work more deliberately. Having a great system for managing what you need to get done is important, but it's just as important to work on the tasks you organize in your system deliberately with intention. That's what this chapter is about. Before you invest in better managing your time, attention, and energy, it's important you continue laying the groundwork by deciding what to focus on every day. And that's where the rule of three comes in. About halfway into my project, I picked up a productivity book named Getting Results the Agile Way, written by J.D. Meyer, Microsoft's Director of Business Programs. On the surface, the book looks more like a textbook than it does a general interest book. It's typeset in papyrus, which is among my least favorite typefaces on the planet. But the content is incredibly powerful because of the way it focuses on productivity through a lens of simplicity. One of my favorite nuggets from the book is the rule of three. Though the concept behind the idea is nothing new and has been talked about by productivity bloggers like Leo Babauta of Zen Habits and Gia Trapani of Lifehacker, it was new to me and too intriguing not to try. Although you can download all the productivity apps in the world, and I have, no app will make you care about what you have to do like the rule of three. The rule is dead simple. One, at the beginning of every day, mentally fast forward to the end of the day and ask yourself, when the day is over, what three things will I want to have accomplished? Write those three things down. Two, do the same at the beginning of every week. The three things you identify then become your focus for the day and the week ahead. That's it. What it looks like in practice. When I first started experimenting with the rule, it took me a couple of weeks to adjust. At first, I made my three daily accomplishments too small and way overshot them. Then I started to make them too ambitious, sometimes intimidatingly so, and felt much less motivated throughout the day as I fell short. About a week and a half into experimenting with the ritual, I finally settled into the right balance, one where I became aware of how much time, attention, and energy I had to get stuff done every day. To give you an idea of what the rule looks like in practice, here are the three things I defined this morning that I'm aiming to accomplish today. 1. Finish writing the rule of three chapter of book. 2. Clear out my email inbox and only check email twice throughout the day. And 3. Organize everything I need to get a U.S. tax number. When I sat down this morning and thought ahead to the end of the day, these are the three things I wanted to accomplish, and so far, I'm on pace to do so. Just for fun, here are the three things I'm aiming to accomplish this week. 1. Finalize the laying the groundwork section of the book and send to my editor. 2. Write and log blog posts for the month. 3. Create mind maps, a graphical way of thinking out ideas and concepts, for 2 speaking engagements in January. At the start of every day and week, I also define 3 personal things I want to accomplish. I don't always come up with 3, and the same is true for my work items, but I find that the ritual lets me feel much more in control of my week ahead and also get excited about the things I have coming up. In case you're curious, here are my 3 goals for today and for this week. Today, 1, have fun at tea tasting with Arden, my girlfriend. 2, read 25 pages for fun. And 3, finalize my Christmas shopping list. And for this week, 1, plan for and buy all my Christmas presents. 2, completely disconnect from work for birthday plans. And 3, pack and travel home for Christmas. These goals are simple, but they're aligned to what I value and find meaningful. And you can bet I'll feel connected and engaged after I accomplish them. Determine the 4 most meaningful tasks in your work and life. Use the rule of 3 on a daily and weekly basis. Thinking in threes. When I asked J.D. Meyer why choosing just 3 daily and weekly accomplishments works best, why not 2 or 1 or 4 or 5, he had an intriguing answer. Quote, "I originally focused on the rule of 3 because when my manager asked what the team achieved for the week, he didn't want a laundry list. He was willing to listen to 3 compelling outcomes." When J.D. later asked his own team members what they were focused on for the day, he similarly found himself not wanting to hear more than 3 outcomes or 3 meaningful things. Quote, "And for myself, I found that 3 things was very easy to keep top of mind without having to write it down or look it up. I could rattle off my 3 outcomes in the hall." This especially helped when doing prioritization on the fly or to really keep myself on track. 3 may seem like an arbitrary number on the surface, but it's large enough to fit the main things you want to accomplish and small enough to make you think hard about what's important. The rule also helps you work smarter because by deciding what you intend to accomplish, you consequently decide what you don't intend to accomplish. And since the rule focuses on the goals you want to accomplish instead of how much you get done, it's much more in line with what productivity is all about. You don't have to look too far to see evidence that we like to think in threes. According to JD, quote, the simplest reason three accomplishments work so well is because our brains are trained from early on to think in threes, the beginning, the middle, the end. For example, the military uses threes to help people remember survival information. You can go 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. When you look around, there are also countless examples of sets of threes embedded everywhere. The three bears, three blind mice, three little pigs, and the three musketeers. Phrases like blood, sweat, and tears, and the good, the bad, and the ugly. And ideas like gold, silver, and bronze medals, and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Our mind is wired to think in groups of three. It also works well because, well, despite your best intentions, emergencies come up. More urgent tasks come your way, and crises will erupt. Defining three things to accomplish will give you a guiding light when you're in the trenches, as opposed to tackling a laundry list of things you want to get done and the dissatisfied feeling of not accomplishing any of it. While later on I'll dive into the best ways I've found to deflect unimportant work, shrink low-impact tasks, and minimize the noise around you, having just three items to focus on throughout the day and week will help you stay centered and accomplish more, even on days where everything hits the fan. I think JD put it well when he said, quote, simplicity makes it easier to evolve and innovate and deal with complexity. The Rule of Three Challenge. Estimated time to do the challenge, 5 minutes. Energy and focus required, 6 out of 10. Value, 8 out of 10. Fun, 9 out of 10. What you'll get out of it. You'll be able to step back to determine what your most productive